We
Hit like
are
a
back,
lead-headed.
and Steve has ruined it for me. Thanks, Steve.
We can go again. That's the magic of editing, Tim.
That's the magic. Yeah, but it's easier said than done when you're the one who has to fucking do it. This shit. you're ruining the joy of timestamps.
It's raw and unfiltered.
Player 2 Pixelcast episode 163. I am your host, Tim Henderson, coming at you from even more distant past than usual. Time is complicated, embargoes are a thing. I don't know how outdated this episode is going to be when it comes out. But, you know, we made it just for you. We made it with so much care, even, that we got one probably hasn't been on the cast in like a year. Steve, how are you doing?
I'm quite well. Recent surgery aside, yeah, had a lot of time off
That's a nice asterisk, like, games. Surgery notwithstanding, I'm doing all right. Oh. Yeah, who's so, like, I feel like there's a, like, how's your NBA feeling at the moment? Like, you know, something
notwithstanding. Pretty down today.
Leg injuries notwithstanding.
Poor old Hallie. Blew an Achilles in the first quarter, and that was our game.
That's how we date this podcast as well.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's the closest the pace has been for a very, very long time. I was daring to dream. It was a game seven, and we still lost. Lost in a bad way. Like, we didn't get belted, but yeah, we lost.
I should be pretty proud of the guys. Like, obviously, yeah. Like, considering you just had your best player go down like the first 6 minutes, about after 6 minutes, actually. Like,
yeah.
Losing by 12 is not actually that bad in the modern NBA.
No, it isn't. But yeah, it's a disappointing
shitty
end.
Way for the series to end.
Yep. It really is.
Yeah. And it actually made me feel better about the fact that I don't normally work Mondays. I was working this Monday morning. I'd not thought far enough in advance when I agreed to that shift.
It was going to be
that it was going to be on this historic Game 7. Probably like the most pivotal NBA playoff game that you can predict since 2016.
Yep.
But yeah, this is not a basketball podcast, and you'll all be glad to know that since that was Game 7 of the NBA Finals, you're probably not going to have to hear about this again until at least October.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the meantime, though, yeah, we're coming from the past. We're going to be looking forward. We're just going to be going over, you know, what are we looking forward to playing in the latter half of this year? So I guess from an Australian perspective, from the winter onwards. And before that, there comes games you can play now, including one game that is very much not out as we record this.
Oh, we're about an hour away from the early access launch as we record. And that is Death Stranding 2.
Yeah, Steve, well done. You're just like picking that right off.
Well, I try. You know, I've been carrying quite a few things recently.
Game of the year.
So, obviously Kojima's latest masterpiece, question mark. I guess, you know, obviously I reviewed it. I put 40 plus hours into it. I came at it from the perspective of someone who bounced off of Death Stranding within the first half a dozen hours and never went back to it. Remastered director's cut just didn't quite scratch that itch for me. And look, it could have been a range of reasons. That was 2019. That's quite a ways ago. And
that was a whole different world.
I can't explicitly... Hey, and look, it was pre-COVID. Like, very... Yeah,
it was a different universe.
I wonder if Death Stranding would have resonated better had it just held off until 2020 and got its Animal Crossing moment. But that aside, for whatever reason... And look, I've dropped great games before, and you go back to them, and you can't necessarily remember why you dropped them. I'm not convinced going back to Death Stranding 1 would be a wise move after playing 2. It's a markedly improved game in a number of ways. And I think part of it is probably, I don't know if he's the kind of guy that reads reviews, but I have to feel like over years and years and years, some of this information filtered back to Kojima that, hey mate, the stuff that you want people to do in this game a lot is like the least fun part of it. Maybe sort that out. And I think in a lot of ways it's worked. Look, the story is a Kojima story. it goes in some strange directions. It's got some twists and turns, and subtext does not exist. It's you know, it can be subtle, and part of that I think could be cultural as well. I think there's some cultural touch points that are a little bit harder to detect as a Westerner, and I think some of it he is right on Front Street. Some of the cameos and other people that are appearing in this are very much probably as a direct result of inspiring some of the things he's doing here, especially in terms of the Australian landscape. Yeah, if you weren't aware, Death Stranding 2 is mostly in Australia.
That came out in the previews. Like, I did not know that. And I was just had an IGN video playing in the background, and then they said that, and I was like, wait, but what?
Yep.
Doesn't look like Australia.
Sadly, it doesn't have any Ice House on the soundtrack. There's no great southern land. It feels like a missed opportunity. Yeah. It
doesn't look like Australia, because the first one, famously set in America, does not fucking look like America.
This does a very good job of being parts of Australia.
All right, fair enough.
The red center, the trees, a lot of bush landscape and things like that. The coastal areas, not as much, but. And look, there's a giant fuck off huge snowy mountain in a chunk of the map that the proportion of the map that it takes up is very misrepresentative of how many fucking snowy mountains we have in Australia. okay. And the biome shifts will give you whiplash. You walk out of knee deep snow onto literally ochre red sand and desert.
Just video games though, dude.
Yeah, it's video games. It's luscious, it's gorgeous. There's kangaroos and shit bouncing around. Like, it's,
can you ride them? I feel like that is the
no
sort of thing
that would... actually you get in trouble if you harm them in any way. You have to rescue them and take them to the animal shelter. If you accidentally
so
run
you
over
make
a hedgehog
burgers.
For example, then it's you lose a bunch of likes. You get some thumbs
this
down.
This is the guy who made Snake Eater, and kangaroo is delicious.
Yes, no kangaroo eater, unfortunately. That's not the subtitle. This one is on the beach. So, combat is vastly improved. There's a few other tweaks to the system. I think just general smoothing and streamlining. Outside of the visual upgrade, which it does, it looks gorgeous. It's running on the Decima engine, and whatever wizardry they're doing there has made it so I didn't choose the performance option, which is usually my default go-to. I think playing at variable refresh rate on a 70-inch Samsung TV, the quality option is definitely the way to go. Part of that could be the pace of the game as well, but also I felt the loss switching to performance. The frame rate trade-off was not worth it, in my opinion, which is very rare for me in games of this generation. 95% of the time, I will take the performance mode any day of the week, but quality managed to stick it out.
Yeah, but I mean, like, this game is more hiking than running, like, at least going from the first one. Like, it makes sense that so long as it's a, you know, evenly frame paced 30, for example.
Yeah, it could do that as well. It can get a bit frenetic in some of the combat. And maybe that is where that performance mode would have paid off. But it really, I guess it comes down to your playstyle as well. It feels like this is way more friendly to playstyle preferences than... And it could have just been that I only made it through the early hours of the first game, but it felt very railroady in terms of, like, here's how you need to do this stuff. Like,
oh, it opens
BTs
up
and everything like that.
Substantially once you... The first one does open up, especially once you figure out how to get around and you start unlocking shit and you're able to build shit and you can set up entire networks
and
this kind of zipping on wire lines just kind of around the entire map by the time you're at the end of that game.
And this has all of that, but I think it's just, I think they figured out how to unroll it to keep people on the hook. I think they went back and probably looked at the early hours of the first game and sort of thought, why did so many people drop off? Because I'll give you a stat that I referred to in my review. I checked the trophies. 78% of people who played Death Stranding did not finish it.
Yeah.
And that stat basically doesn't change after the first few chapters. Like, you watch it dwindle off.
Okay, that's what's interesting. Because 78% of people not finishing a game doesn't surprise me at all. the thought that like 78% of people who get past the first 5 hours in a game that big and still finish it, that's kind of interesting. That really says like once it gets its hooks into you, you are on board. It's just doesn't get there.
And that's, I think that's one of the benefits of all this metadata they're collecting with trophies is clearly, I don't know if someone at Sony or Kojima himself has done it under his own steam, or, you know, one of the many people at Kojima Productions after that insanely long credit sequence tapped someone else on the shoulder and said, hey, did you notice that like 4 out of 5 people stopped playing this game after chapter 4? Maybe we should figure out why that is. And I feel like they've done that. It feels markedly improved in the pacing in the early hours, despite the fact that my head was sort of spinning because it's that Kojima overload of proper nouns and acronyms and other things. There is a handy recap in the main menu that is not a 2-hour video. I was sort of wincing when I clicked on it. And no, it's like this cool little motion comic narrated by the voice actor of Dead Man and runs you through in about 20 pages the sequence of events for the first game and gets you up to speed. It's over in a couple of minutes. And it was, you know, amazing for getting me ready to dive into the second game, having a pretty solid idea of what had happened, although I think it sneakily doesn't mention some things in too much detail so that reveals later in to pay off slightly more.
Oh, wait, so you can't eat kangaroo, though, but can you order a meat lover's pizza and a can of Red Bull?
No, they've forgone the licensed inclusions this time. So there is,
but
there
clearly
is,
you have not been on Blue Sky today because there's been this whole thing going around about a Kojima set on Domino's, and all it is a fucking meat lover's pizza and a Red Bull.
There's still lots of licensed sunglasses and clothing and other things like that. But
Monster Energy is no more.
Yeah, Monster Energy is no more. You're drinking chiral tea now, which looks very Aldi brand
Monster
packaging. Yeah. No, it's tea. Okay, it's tea. I will reveal that there is a pizza chef that you can visit in the game, but they have not provided me with a pizza as of yet. But I haven't completed their entire storyline, so I don't know if that could lead to pizza.
Meat lovers and my energy drink. And my head, I will probably have forgotten about that in a few days, but at the moment, I'm still very entertained by it.
Look, by the time you're listening to this, you will have had days, if not a week or more, to read my review and see that I was overwhelmingly positive on it. I'm still not sure if that's Stockholm Syndrome or it's just a massive confluence of events that meant that I was very, very receptive to the experience this game gave where I might not otherwise. And I sort of put that out in the review as well.
Apparently Steve has just gone mute. This is a very interesting turn for the podcast. So basically, see, Kojima is in the clouds. You heard that Steve said, I'm positive on this game. And he sensed a butt coming. And so, like, just from the heavens, he turned Steve's microphones off. But it can come.
Oh, no,
as it
cut me off in my back.
Oh, yeah, I heard the whole thing. But yeah.
All right. I didn't. So this is going to be, like, super interesting.
Yeah.
I do not know how this recording is going to turn out. All right. Carry on.
Oh, well, basically, like, look, I'm a guy who's about to turn 40 and just had his fifth back surgery in around a decade. And I'm setting out to do a hike through mountainous Japanese terrain in October to mark my 40th. And cruising around as a guy who can carry heavy things over mountains is like a pretty good power fantasy for me right now.
Like very down-to-earth power fantasy.
Yeah, it's like ticking all those boxes. Like, yes, I can carry bags over mountains. This is like, it's my goal. So I think, and again, being able to bash it out non-stop over the span of 2 weeks, I think, is maybe also something that made me more receptive to it. I don't know how well it'd play in short bursts.
Yeah.
I mean, I mean, post-surgery, like, I played through Final Fantasy 13 after dislocating my knee for the fourth time and not being it. And, I mean, Hughes has done that more than me, but he doesn't tear the ligaments when he does it. I tear ligaments when I do it. Like, I fuck my knee up properly, which meant I couldn't walk for, like, a month, which changes your tolerance for some sort of chewy bullshit in video games, I have found.
Yeah, and I think that's absolutely part of this as well. And I know that, I mean, I acknowledge that in my reviews are inherently subjective, and that my experience is not going to be everyone else's experience. And it could just be that I was oddly positioned for On Death that... Stranding 2 to be exactly what I wanted at this point in time.
Or what you needed, even.
Yeah.
Oh, well, going from something you spent a long time playing to, so how long did you actually get to play the Borderlands for?
4 hours, actually. So it's a pretty good preview.
Exactly, oh. Exactly 10% of Steve's playthrough. All right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So Borderlands 4, I was lucky enough to go up to 2K offices in Sydney a little while ago now. The embargo's only just dropped. And play a good chunk of Borderlands 4 and meet the man himself, Randy Pitchford.
Really? That doesn't seem like a sales pitch.
He was there, and he certainly was something. He seems like, I don't know, he just seems like this the nerdiest kid that's completely, like, detached from reality. I don't know.
I think a part of me would look at him and go, dude, just admit that you watch porn, like... It's yeah. not that embarrassing.
he's an odd cat.
And his first name's a dead giveaway. Come on.
Man, that's just, yeah.
They did have some interesting stories. The guy, I forget the other guy's name, and that's terrible. I should have looked it up, but I'll have an interview with him up soon. But he's 2IC now. Used to be the editor of what's the magazine that Bilbo used to edit in Australia?
Game Informer?
Game Informer, yes. So the guy, he was the editor of Game Informer in the US for 15 years, is now Randy's 2IC.
Okay.
And what I had a really good chat with him about, you know, what his perspective coming from the press into a game like Borderlands has been like. And Randy backed him up on this. He said, I could come at it in a way that I would have. And I pointed out the things that Randy necessarily didn't see about Borderlands 3 that put people off, and what we as reviewers would have found annoying about it and stuff like that. And so we've actively sought to fix those things. And one of the biggest complaints about Borderlands has been the shooting. It's always just felt fine. It's never been...
It's been more about seeing the number than, like, the feeling.
Yeah, it's never really...
It's not been compelling the way that, like, Destiny shooting was compelling.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, this is just a little thing that I want to keep doing. I don't care about anything else.
Yes. So this plays a whole lot better. Like, it really feels a whole lot better. You're more mobile. There's a lot more verticality because you've got a grappling hook. So there's points around. You can pull yourself up onto roofs and get high angles and stuff. It's still frantic, and it's still very Borderlands in appearance. But the combat from my time with it felt immediately more satisfying. Like, straight out of the bat, you went, okay, this feels like a shooter should feel. That really impressed me. There's a new open world, which makes sense in Borderlands, because previously they've kind of been these chunks of open world connected by a loading screen.
Yeah, the hub and spoke approach.
Yeah, so this time they've just...
feels pretty dated now.
It does. And so they've just pretty much done away with that, and it's just a big open map. You know, there's obviously missions that are not set on the main map where you go off and do the story missions, but otherwise most of it's on the open map. That's probably my biggest concern, is there a lot to do in the open world? Who knows? I didn't get heaps of time in there. But it's certainly...
Answer that question.
No, it's not. And it was fun to get around because you can now instantly summon your vehicle. You don't have to go to a like pickup point, which you used to have to do in the old game. You could just summon a vehicle and jump on and away you go. Weapons seem like Borderlands stuff, some crazy stuff even in the time I had. You know, it's a bit of a lottery because they use that random sort of thing, but good fun, lots of cool, crazy stuff.
I guess that's where it's impressive, like if you have that many weapons and still making them feel good. Like, I feel like this always kind of been like the excuse. It's like, well, we have this many guns, how could we possibly make them all feel great?
So the ones I used, there was a really cool, like, old-style musket sort of weapon that was like a one hit kill sort of weapon, but it took ages to load, so it was really fun to use actually in lining up. And I got to play as two of the four Vault Hunters. One of them is kind of a techno wizard guy that's got lots of missiles and rockets that pop out of his shoulders and hacks robots and things like that. And the other one was the game Siren, and if you've played any of the Borderlands before, they all have a Siren playable character who are these kind of space witches. And she's like a pet class. So she's got summons of different pets and they kind of come in and help you out. There's like Space Tiger and Space Wolf and, you know, things like that that come in and help you. Both fun to play. Obviously hard to tell about the skill tree and how it all develops out, because we played a one chunk with a like a level 5, a level 6 character, and then another chunk with a like a level 13 character. So we had a bit more stuff, but
yeah,
still not a lot.
Did those feel very distinct or?
Yeah. I mean, and there's 3 different skill trees now for each of the characters. So you can kind of specialize the character even more down each of these 3 paths. So there is quite a lot of customization to people to muck around with there that I think people are going to really like. It seemed like each upgrade was meaningful too, whereas some of the older Borderlands games, it was more just number goes higher sort of upgrade. Mm-hmm. Whereas this seems to add a bit of difference every time you get an upgrade. So
I wonder if that's them refining the sort of algorithm as well around all of that.
I think so. It's clear that they've taken on board where Borderlands 3 failed. And I mean, it's not like it was a big failure. It still did well. Like, it still did well. Yeah. But it wasn't the hit that Borderlands 2 was. It wasn't the hit that Tiny Tina's of Dungeons & Dragons 1 was either. And
what
else?
How do enemies feel? Because I think one of my problems with Borderlands 3 was that it just felt... They felt very spongy. It felt like I was fighting enemies for far too long a lot of the time.
There's a bit of that. They're definitely more on the kind of take a lot of hits enemies. But I did find their like attack patterns way more interesting, and the actual act of engaging with them was a lot more fun. Especially so the quick story beat is that this planet's been hiding in the Vale and it's run by this dictator. So this veil was just of space, you know, where no one could get in or out. And then all of a sudden that veil disappears. And all of he's gets, you know, galactic inspiration to take over the world, this bad guy, take over the universe. And he's very much a Darth Vader style baddie. He's not the smart mouth, you know, kind of Elon Musk wannabe that Handsome Jack was. And he's not the fucking annoying YouTube streamers that the bad guys in 3 were. He's like a legitimate baddie that's
so it's like an efficient, just down to business.
Yeah, get down. I've got all these killer robots and shit, and yeah. So that's an interesting turn for them too. So it'll be fun to see how that plays out. It's a brand new planet.
Split screen?
No,
just we that performance here, because like that's a large part of the appeal.
No, I didn't get to play split screen at all, and we were playing on killer PCs too. So you know,
any read of that for the average person? Then
no, they did. They did say it will be Steam Deck verified on launch. It is coming out for the Switch too. So they're obviously pretty happy with the optimizations they've got in place. But yeah, I'm much more excited about it now that I've played it than I was going into it. I was more interested in another Tiny Tina because I had an absolute blast with that one. And it was kind of silly in a way that was more like the Naked Gun instead of like, you know, immature humor. And this one seems to definitely be more mature in its approach to humor. Claptrap's still there. And there's one mission with him where it's actually a really quite a moving mission where Claptrap wants you to go and find all these things. And you realize their memories because Pandora gets destroyed, and that's at the start of this game. And it's all these memories of all these old teammates that Claptrap used to hang around with, and it's kind of this kind of quite moving mission where you're hunting all this stuff for Claptrap. You don't find out till right at the end that's what you're doing of the mission. And yeah, it surprised me, you know, that there was a bit of subtlety in Claptrap riding, which was nice to see. But yeah, I think it's much better than number 3. I think it's going to be a good lot of fun. I mean, I dig the Borderlands games generally. 3 was a letdown, but the others I've all enjoyed with friends especially. It's a great game to get with mates, and I think this is going to be no different to that. I don't know that it's going to win necessarily brand new fans or people that hated the formula before. It is still the same formula. But
it may welcome some people back home.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be in. I think there'll be some relapse, some lapse players jump back in. People that didn't like 3 but like the others will definitely get a kick out of this, I think. So I think it's a good move from Gearbox.
It's an interesting decision to like actually have Randy there. Like you have to fly him to Australia. Like that must have been an interesting call to make. Like
yeah, we were the first on the press tour Australia, so he came to us, and then I think he, which is why there was such a long time between me playing it and then the embargo. Yeah, so I think that he started in Australia and jumped around to all the major hotspots around the world. To be honest, so yeah,
right, cool. Well, I mean, I'm. Never been super hot on Borderlands, but it's kind of fun if you have a friend in the same room.
Did you ask Randy about the movie?
I did actually. I said in my interview with him, I asked him if he was worried that the movie's poor reception would hurt the game. And he gave a surprisingly honest answer in that he said it's not going to help. was his response.
That's a fantastic having a beer answer as well. Like imagine the pint next to him on the counter.
Yeah, so that was like, his kind of response. That's all happen. I really got out of him, out of it. Obviously, he doesn't want to, you know, get himself, you know, he thought yeah, before he spoke, which is...
Yeah. A little bit.
Mm. Pause, have a drink of water, compose oneself.
Yeah.
Diplomatic answer.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that they're probably sitting there watching very closely, like with a like, do we need to run over here right now?
Yep.
You're in your screening of the Borderlands movie and roasting it, and you just hear some gentle crying in the back row, and it turns out it's Randy.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Yeah, that movie really did tank. Anyway, like about 2 days after we recorded our last episode, or our last episode went live, I guess, actually, my Switch 2 did finally arrive.
It's all right.
And I was like, I mean, I do have thoughts, but I guess a lot of those are like come and gone already. In short, I'm surprised by how good it is docked.
Yep.
I'm annoyed that game critics always seem to give Nintendo too much of a pass on screen quality. Like, it happened with the first Switch, and I go, it's just an LCD, but it's a pretty good LCD. The first Switch's LCD sucked. The Switch 2's LCD is better color reproduction, but I don't think this is a fantastic screen.
I mean, it's no OLED, that's for sure. And come on,
it's
the PS
like
Vita
definitely
had an OLED.
A step back. It is definitely a step back. I would take a 720p OLED with it. And the HDR is barely it's barely perceptible difference. I'm going to see some battery comparison tests because I don't know if that's going to be worth having turned on.
To be fair, I don't think many people are doing HDR super great across the board.
Yeah, but I mean, the screen itself is not doing HDR well. Yeah. Like that compared to what my the day after it came, like Digital Foundry finally had their review up, and they were basically calling it fake HDR. Backing that up. But no, so I was like, yay, I'm going to finally get to play Mario Kart. But no, I'm not. Even though I live in Japan, I have 2 gigabyte internet. It took 4 fucking hours to download that game.
Yep.
That's why I buy cartridges, baby.
Oh my god. But that's not actually what I want to talk about. Like, the big one is, and like, welcome to, I'm going to reintroduce everybody to Huso's Games Don't Need to Look Any Better Than This Series.
Yep.
You know, like, Super Mario Odyssey looks really fucking fantastic.
Yeah, it does.
Holy shit, dude.
Well, isn't it now running higher res, smooth?
It is running 1080 on that handheld screen. I think it may be 4K on TVs. And they've, like, also, like, done a little bit more work to, like, fix up some of, like, the animation lag in backgrounds where things would, like, run at half frame rate. Game looks superb.
Yeah, I fired it up when I got my Switch 2. And
So that suite of games where they sort of, you know, get the little freebies, not the $20 upgrade, but nice little patches to smooth things out. And there's a bunch of other games I've played on there that I think they just let them run uncapped on the Switch.
No, anything
and as a result,
that had
they
like
play
a
so much nicer on the Switch 2.
Dynamic resolution scaling or an uncapped frame rate.
Yeah.
I noticed the Paradise Killer just feels smoother, and I don't know if that's the VRR or it is actually running at a more stable frame rate, but everything feels a little bit smoother. Like
the real question, Tim, Xenoblade Chronicles 2.
I have it, I have not tried it yet, because what I did do is like, you know, I should try one of these ones that's actually patched, so I put Mario Odyssey in there, and we'll keep this short because newer releases have taken up most of our time. I just kind of kept on playing it, like Mario Odyssey is a very good game. I think I may just play this through completion. And by completion, I mean scroll credits. I don't mean like sicko get all the moons. Or
get all the moons, yeah.
But it's something I like have to put out. Like, guys, this game is really fucking good. Like, if you have a Switch 2, you just bought it, and you're like, there are no fucking games on Switch 2.
It was really good Mario Odyssey 8 years ago, too.
It's like a 7-year-old game or something at this point. It really does look like it. It looks current gen. Like, it is ridiculous how good it looks. Like, it looks a bit sparse. That's about the only thing I can really hold against it. But it just feels fantastic. It looks great. It is, like, again, I was just going, I'm just going to look at all this shit. And then I just kept on playing Mario Odyssey for, like, the rest of the hour. So I just, like, kind of wanted to throw out there very quickly, Mario Odyssey, still really good. Not anything against the people who are super looking forward to the new Donkey Kong that's probably going to be out within days of this episode dropping. Yep.
18th of July, I think.
Yeah, it's a bit later. They've certainly held back the release of a couple of things. Even that Kirby update patch expansion, whatever, is not till August.
Yeah, some of those updates are like themselves, like being, I mean, Nintendo's just intentionally making sure there's going to be something every month.
Yeah,
I think, but it is actually wild, like how much extra life the backlog is getting. And again, just want to kind of like just give a little shout out to like Odyssey. That game still super fun, and I've said it like 5 times already. Looks really.
They can finally get Marvel Midnight Suns on there, you bastards.
I think that ship has sailed, Stephen. Sorry,
a man can dream.
Yep,
you could just buy a Steam Deck.
I can't. I just bought a Switch too.
Yeah, I mean, I said that saying like, yeah, I also made that call.
Yep.
And I'm gonna have mixed feelings about. Although, yeah, again, it has so far exceeded my docked expectations. Like, actually,
I don't
very
think
good image quality. Like,
I'm gonna play it undocked. I honestly, I think my playtime with the Switch is gonna be the complete opposite of how it was with the original Switch, I think.
All right, Mr. ROG ally, we know.
But that's why, right? It's a different world now, you know? It's very much a different world. So, yeah. I took it to Sydney last week.
Just a little bit over where I think I'm, because I was playing in bed for quite a bit, and I'm like, oh, my hands are hurting now. Like, this didn't happen.
Oh, you definitely need one of those cases that adds to the back of it so you, regular human hands can actually hold it.
Yeah. I was looking at one of those already because it's quite unergonomic.
I picked one up off Amazon for $15 before I even got the Switch 2 because I had the same issue with the Switch 1. My hands would cramp up holding that thing because you're holding this tiny little bread slice size thing and you're gripping it like death because it's no good. So I got the
case that molds it a bit. I was able to survive
with
the Switch. And part of this is because, like, again, you buy those grips and then you have to carry them with you as a portable thing, like...
Yeah.
The smaller form factor, the thinner form factor matters. So that, I think, is actually going to bother me a little bit. But yeah, I had actually pre-purchased I was like, I will have your $10 carry case, please, and your $10 screen protector, please. And I had that shit lined up, so I was like, good to go.
You got that free screen protector, Tim. What are you worried about?
Yeah, I can't wait to peel that off and see what happens.
Wasn't the message, don't peel it off?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
No, that's not a screen protector, right? But, yeah. Anyway, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, I guess I'm not going to be talking about games from 2017 anymore. For real this time. Yeah. Huso's just like trying to burst out of his own skin into his microphone. I won't speak, I won't speak, I won't speak, I won't speak. And somehow we're like halfway through this year already, and that just feels wrong. And I feel like I've been saying that every mid-year-ish point for the last decade. So, you know.
Yes, because that's what happens as you get older. Time gets faster.
Yeah, time is like a roll of toilet paper. It just like it seems to like move faster the further in you get. But there is actually a bunch of like really good looking stuff coming out in the second half this year, which I guess is a relief considering traditionally, even these days, that is where all the big releases tend to land, even though we did just have a Nintendo console launch alongside a bunch of five-year-old games that, shock horror, did not sell that well when they tried to sell them for $80 Australian.
Who'd have thunk it?
Who'd have thunk it? Never mind the whole Game Key fiasco, which is probably confusing as many people as it's putting off. But first things first, stuff that we're actually looking forward to, and I'm going to go first because it's already going to be redundant by the time this episode goes live, which is Death Stranding 2 is my most anticipated game of the year. And the fact that I will be traveling a month after it comes out is suggesting that maybe I'm not going to buy it right away because I really don't want to be like I'm halfway through this game and now I have to put it down for a fucking month and forget what I was doing and then come back to it again type scenario. Yeah.
It seems like one of those games, like, I find that every time I try and go back to The Witcher 3, it takes me like, you know, 2 hours of sitting there to kind of get into the flow again. So
Witcher 3 had some pretty good DLC, but fuck me, like getting
back into it is hard.
Back into it, and like the first DLC was actually really hard on its own merits as well. Never mind the fact that, hey, I hadn't played this game in over half a year, guys. Like,
yeah. I think I bounced on the Ghost of Tsushima DLC for that reason. I hadn't played the main game in so long, and I was just like, I can't remember how to do this, and now I don't care to.
So, welcome to our criticizing delayed assumptive DLC cast.
But I will give you some hope, Tim. Death Stranding 2 has a quite good sort of, what would the word be? Like a digital logbook of things that you can go through, and it will literally tell you what was the exact last story beat that happened and what are you kind of aiming to next.
What I think I need is like some just a bunch of really simple side quests is the sort of thing that will like just like let you get your feeling of things back.
Oh, absolutely, and it has those coming out the wazoo.
Also, yeah, I mean, I did actually buy a PS5 Pro, but this seems like the game that would like really help indicate that.
Justify. You're still trying to justify that.
Justify your purchase. It runs slightly better.
I've had an
Well, I'm no longer anticipating Death Stranding 2, so I guess I will have to go for Everybody's Golf Hot Shots.
They've finally just merged the names together.
Yeah, they've just given up
on it. This is the Yakuza Like a Dragon moment for golf.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
The East and the West have finally met to converge to become Everybody's Golf Hot Shots. At least they didn't change it to Hot Shots Everybody's Golf in America. That would have been wild.
Yeah. That would have been funny, actually.
But, I mean, look, I love Everybody's Golf. I think it's it's easily my favorite golf game that exists. I don't much care for realistic golf. And
nope.
I even don't like the new analog swing system. I still want the old button taps because I'm a sad old man. And I think Everybody's Golf Hot Shots will give that to me with some lovely fidelity. Again, my only disappointment will be that I'm probably going to have to play it sitting on my couch on my PS5 and not on my lovely Switch 2.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
No. It might get a PC release, so maybe down the road that'd be an option. But yeah.
Again, maybe, can Huso maybe if Sony would drop the price on the
maybe if Sony had dropped the price on the Portal to, you know, $99, I'd consider one. But outside of that.
Yes.
Portal's with everybody I know who's bought one actually really, really likes it. And I'm still like,
I don't know anyone who paid for one, so I'm not getting an unbiased opinion.
I know like three people and they're all like super fond of them.
Yeah.
Anyway, Huso, you've played all the stuff already.
the next game that's coming that I'm super hyped for is Mafia: The Old Country.
I should have made a Huso bingo card before we started this.
Look, I've had a lot of chance to talk about it already, but it is the next big game that I am really looking forward to. Third person action. It's linear, wholly linear, no open world.
That's the thing that actually has me encouraged. Like, I kind of want to hear people openly say we did not feel a need to make it gigantic.
Yeah.
Because I know that, like, the first couple of games were sort of like, Mafia 2 especially was very much like that LA Noir style of, there's an open world.
Yeah.
but there's nothing to do in it. Yeah, just enjoy it as window dressing and don't spend your life cruising around in it, because it's just there to bolster the narrative and not to provide you with more gameplay content. It's not a map dotted with icons.
No, it was really a storytelling device in those games, because, you know, it was that time you were driving was a lot of story beats and conversations that happened.
Exposition.
Yeah.
It kind of gave a vibe, like it gave a sense of place as opposed to sets.
Yeah, so this one has no open world at all. I assume there is driving in it, though, and there is horse riding in it. It is set early 1900s in Sicily, and there is actually a Sicilian dub. They went back, so Sicilian is a distinct language difference from Italian, so they went and actually made a Sicilian dub, which is very cool.
Incredibly cool. I hope people actually use it.
Yeah, it seems like they've gone all in on the authenticity. I really like the way they do story. They're very clever in their storytelling. So I'm very keen for that. Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
I haven't played a Mafia game I didn't like, so.
Yeah. Even 3, I'm a bit of a 3 apologist.
3 I was bombed by. I fucking love the trailers for Mafia 3, I think is like where I stand on that one.
Yeah, I enjoyed the whole story. It's just so much. They filled the game with Ubisoft shit. And
yeah, 3 was great if you ignored all the side content.
Yeah.
I got just exhausted. I really, really liked Mafia 2, though, and that game did atmosphere so well. Like, like right from the opening is like, this game has a feel about it.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm very much looking forward to that.
I will. I may as well get it out of the way. Someone has to say Metroid Prime, which, fascinatingly, we still don't have an actual date for.
Yeah, delay. Tim, you might be
2026.
You might be, being a little bit too optimistic with this one, methinks.
Well, so is Nintendo in the London Tube, according to some photos going around.
Yeah, I did say that.
I'm not fully convinced weren't photoshopped a little bit, but I feel like we would know about it now if they were. So maybe this it's very strange. But for anybody listening who doesn't know what the hell I'm talking about, there was a bunch of posters, or specifically one big poster from the London Underground that just had the game advertised with Out Now.
Yeah, that seems like a mistake. It's not out. I checked.
Yeah.
I wonder if anyone actually walked into GameStop or EB or whatever they're called in London.
It's
went,
possible. Like, I mean, if you're not clued in, you like Metroid, you're like, wait, shit, this shit's out. Like,
yeah.
Oh, look, I could foresee that being maybe an October, November, December thing to just bump some sales before Christmas.
Yeah, I think that game is actually finished. Honestly, yeah. I think they're just waiting for when. I suspect Nintendo has a lot of stuff that's basically finished and they're just deciding when they want to release it.
I think that's fairly obvious by the amount of Switch 1 games that only ever got to 1.0. No patches, just we had this in the can for months, doesn't need anything else.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it wouldn't surprise me.
No, yeah, I think they might even just shadow drop it.
Ooh.
They may just do a...
That's a bold move. I think you could
shadow drop.
If it was
a Microsoft game, I would almost say certainly, but it's Nintendo, and they may be a bit more conservative there.
You know what's a game that everyone's hoping will get a shadow drop? Hollow Knight Silksong, baby, come on. I played it in 2019, Team Cherry.
Wait, Steve, you're telling me I'm optimistic about Metroid coming out this year, and you're talking about fucking Silksong, which is literally just code for is never coming out at this point.
They can't make me wait any longer, Tim. It's been nearly 6 years since I played it. What are they doing?
It has been promised to be playable at events in September. Also, Microsoft conference, when they did the ROG Ally X announcement, mentioned that you'll be able to play Silksong day one on the ROG Ally X. So the ROG Ally X has a November, I think, release window. So, yeah.
It's coming to Switch 2. Switch 1 was the platform it sold the highest amount on. There's no way it's not coming out this year.
Wasn't it already shown in one of the Switch 2 previews as...
I think so.
Like in a sizzle reel or something.
Yeah, it was in one of the original sizzle reels for the Switch 2 announcement.
But I mean, this is a very good game by a small team that sold very well. So they probably they're under no pressure. I'm sure they are financially fine.
Based on the team size and the sale numbers of Hollow Knight 1, they didn't
they
need
are
to make
fine.
Silksong.
Like they don't but... have, like don't need to answer to anybody. They can just make it at a comfortable pace and just have it out when it's done. And the thing is, People it's like, it's still going to sell. Like,
yeah. It's like Concerned 8 with Stardew Valley. If he is ever going to do Stardew Valley 2, it does need to come out anytime soon.
Yeah.
If at all, honestly. Like, as far, like yeah. he's set up for life. Yeah. But I would like other games to come out. Like, I am in no rush to play Stardew Valley in slightly better frame rate on Switch 2. That's not a thing that my life really needs.
No.
What it does need, though, maybe, is Ninja Gaiden 4. That thing is looking sweet.
Yes, it is looking very good.
It's like Ninja Gaiden made with a lot of help by the guys who made the best Ninja Gaiden game that was Ninja Gaiden in the form of Metal Gear Rising.
Vengeance.
It's apparently
it's really fucking good.
Reading a few hands-on previews with it, they're saying it's got the juice. It's it just feels like, and the camera's not fucked, which is great news. Yep. Because that was the worst part about Ninja Gaiden 1 and 2 was the camera was fucked. So, yeah, I'm keen, very much. I love the Ninja Gaiden games. They were great.
Yeah, I've never been a huge fan of them, but I have enjoyed a couple of Platinum Action games a lot. So, and the style of this looks very... It also has a kind of Platinum that has a, I don't know, I've always... I actually got to speak to them about it once at TGS years ago, and they were confused, so maybe I'm in my own little bubble here. But there's a certain nostalgic, like almost like Sega Mega Drive aesthetic about it. Like, it's like this is what I thought games would look like in the future, back when the Mega Drive was like my main thing. And it still has that feel about it, again, when I'm looking at it and I'm going, there's something about it that like, makes me feel warm and cuddly and, you know, maybe cut into tiny pieces inside. I don't know, It looks cool. It's got a vibe. If it plays as well as people are saying it does.
Yep. I'm pretty keen.
Then that may be my main holiday break focus. Like, get away from the RPGs of like, I hope it's a 10 to 15 hour game though.
Yeah, I think it will be.
I do not need a 40 hour epic.
Although, you could get The Outer Worlds 2, which is what I wanted.
Well done, well done. Pat in the back.
Yeah, everything I see about this seems like they're just getting funnier and funnier. And that Obsidian writing black magic that they've got seems to be in full force. And bring it on. A lot of, once again, hands-on reports from the recent events saying the shooting feels amazing. You know, writing's all there and what people have played and some really cool perks and flaws systems that really can make characters unique and fun. I mentioned last week the knee popping one, but there was a whole bunch of wild different perks that are going around that will really change things up. So yeah, I'm an Obsidian fanboy from
it looks all, good. I am so. Kind of fascinated that they're still releasing it this year.
Yeah.
I mean, this, they've already got Avowed out. Grounded 2 is happening.
Yeah, in early access in
three
July.
3 games in 1 year?
Yeah.
What the hell?
Steven's very quiet right now. He's talking.
Yeah, okay. Have you got Silent Steve? Like, are we back to the issue that I had at the beginning of the podcast?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, we've
okay,
lost.
Okay, it wasn't my imagination before. All right. Steve doesn't get to have an opinion anymore.
Yeah. Oh, he says.
Yeah, okay. It wasn't my imagination before. Hopefully that means recording is actually going to sound okay on my end. Yeah, sorry, Steve, but I'm happy about not having to do as much work. You go tap your microphone a little bit more and then see what
you can find.
Check the charge on your headset or something.
You can jump
in the meantime. Yeah, in the meantime, I'm very optimistic about Sonic Racing again.
I've played it.
Like I said at the start, you've played everything already.
It is very much a fun kart Sonic game. Super cool. I enjoyed it.
I mean, I cannot stress how much I played of the second game, Sonic Sega All-Stars Transit, the one with a stupidly long name, and I mostly played it on Vita. So the idea of having this on Switch 2 actually feels like a spiritual sequel to me.
Yeah.
It was very good in Vita, except the deeper you got into the game and more shit started to happen, the frame rate really started to tank. During some of the later races, which was problematic when you're already working with smaller analog sticks and a smaller screen to be.
Yeah.
To begin with, they got quite difficult, but man, I liked that game a lot. And I, the one that followed on,
was fine. Yeah,
it was
this
fine.
This one definitely feels more in line with that All Stars Transformer, whatever the hell it was.
Yeah.
there's a cool feature where the person in first after the first lap gets to choose the next, like there's this level choice option as you're driving that'll switch between different levels and different tracks.
I like this idea a lot. I hope it has legs.
Yeah, it seems very cool to play, and yeah.
I also hope that the races like feel okay in single player, because again, I've been playing a decent amount of Mario Kart recently, and like those tracks, some of them are pretty creative, but they're also very wide because there are so many races that are designed for multiplayer, and it's not a great single player experience so far.
No, I found that too with Mario Kart. This one's definitely tighter. I played three full Grand Prix when I was there, so. Yeah, and I was playing on the middle difficulty, whatever they equip the 100cc equivalent, and yeah, good challenge from the other races. There's a rivals mode, so you can kind of challenge someone, and you get boosts for beating them as well. So you know, it was good. I enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, this is going to be like a pretty good year for arcade races as well. Like also, like Fast Remix is probably going to be the first Switch 2 game I actually buy, which feels weird, like this is a racing console all of a sudden. Hey Steve, do you want to like write down something you're looking forward to on a piece of paper and hold it up for the camera?
Am I back? He's back. Right, very good. Yeah, I don't know, stupid mic. I was gonna say earlier, I wouldn't be surprised if some of these games, like we said with Outer Worlds 2, why wouldn't you launch this year now you know that GTA 6 is out next year?
Yeah,
I was thinking like a February thing next year, like GTA 6.
The sigh of relief that so many devs must have just let out when that was like, and now we're coming out next year.
Yeah. Yeah.
But also gasp of panic that some others must have had when they saw 20.
Oh, absolutely. They would have been like, no, that means our release window is, here's one that is maybe not everyone's favorite entries in this series, but Tony Hawk 3 and 4.
I think they're bloody good.
I think 4 was one of my favorite of the series. Mm. Maybe it's because I got it with my PlayStation 2, so I had to play quite a lot of it.
Yep.
But yeah, I'm pretty keen on Tony Hawk's 3 and 4.
Yeah, so am I. I love those games. I liked them all right up until probably American
Underground
Wasteland.
Underground.
Even like Underground and Underground 2 were pretty decent.
Pretty fun. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I'm happy for more Tony Hawk. Some cool new features added to it, like the Australian girls in it, the Australian teenager that won the Olympic gold. She's in it,
yeah.
So you know, stuff like that, which is cool.
I can relive some of my misspent youth and think, oh my god, is it really 20 plus years since this came out?
Yeah,
just part of the problem with some of these remasters, dude. Like, just wait until like that GameCube catalog on the Switch 2 starts getting expanded and you like think about how long ago it was since you played XYZ the last time. or you know, on that note, I'm a little on the fence, but I'm cautiously optimistic about Metal Gear Delta.
Why wouldn't you be? That looks, it's, you know, Snake Eater is fantastic, and just having another way to play that is always a win.
I never played it, so I'm actually keen because I'm, you know, missed it when it came around.
I really want to try and force my wife to play through it with me because I think this game is going to bring her to a sobbing mess at the end. You say you have no idea why, but this game, it's a Kojima game, but it goes some places. But unlike most Kojima games, because this is like the setup to everything goes crazy, it's mostly coherent and followable by most people.
And look, how many revisions have they done of this? Like, it's... Surely this is basically like the director's cut at this point. Like,
except the director's not involved anymore.
Well, after Metal Gear Solid 5, some people might say that was a good thing. But especially people working at Konami. So, look, there's notes. There'd be things laying around. Surely someone at Konami has figured this is probably the best way to do this.
By all accounts, like the team is being very, very respectful of the...
Yeah.
To the point where, like, the main concern is they may do it to a fault.
Yeah, and don't improve the things that probably should be improved. But we'll
definitely see. I hope they did not remove the gimmick on the old man sniper boss fight. See, if this if this game was coming out before I had a trip, it would be perfect. I would just get to that fight, put down my controller, go on a holiday, come back. Mild spoiler, I guess, about something everybody should know anyway. There is an old man sniper in this game who will die of old age if you put the game away. Long enough.
That is such a Kojima thing.
Yeah, but it's an awesome Kojima thing. Like, I'm 100% on board with that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's got tons of those weird little Easter eggs of if you do this, then it changes that.
But like coherent story, and it actually, I remember it got a lump in my throat as well at the very end, like that. It. Oh man, but yeah, in the current context, again, it may be politically very interesting to play this game right now.
Yeah, there's a few of those, isn't there?
Classic Kojima.
Well, I guess I've got one or two more, but I'll talk about Ghosts of Yotai because that looks really good. I really quite enjoyed the first one.
Fucking year for like samurai swords to
try
and put a really broad like 80s. I wanted I'm saying that in like the sense like the late 80s where we just called everything East Asian and Oriental samurai sword because I feel like there's a couple of games coming from China as well. But like we've really hit that era of cool again.
We have. And this one looks great. And I think they'll learn lessons from Tsushima. And I think this will be the better game for it because I think Tsushima was a very good first draft.
Tsushima was great, but it was very much a loop game.
Yeah, yeah. So, and I think this will be better as a result. And it's funny you should say that, Tim, because I'm going to like quickly jump into my second one I wanted to talk about because it's very on theme, and it's Shinobi.
Yeah, bring back Shinobi, baby.
I played it at the Sega thing that I went to with Sonic, and it blew my mind. Like, it blew my mind. It plays perfectly. Like, the best, from this slice, it felt like the best platformer action that I've played in a very, very long time. Boy, it was so good. It's made by the people that did the Streets of Rage 4.
That's why it looks so incredible.
It looks amazing. It plays better. And like I could have sat there and played the whole thing if they let me, but I only had 35 minutes with it. So and I loved it. I loved it. It is shaping up really nicely. So yeah, keep an eye out for that
this
one.
This is the one I'm gonna like fight for the review code on, I think. Like
I'm happy to buy this one and play it on my PC on the go. It's going to be just good. It's going to be really, really good. Keep an eye out for Shinobi, especially if you like an old 2D platformer.
Yeah,
like,
don't let Ninja Gaiden, again, these swords are katana heaven, baby. Don't let that and its little pixel art thing, which I think is maybe also coming out this year, step on Shinobi. Like, man, Revenge of Shinobi was so good, and I was just like a little bit too young when I finally got a Mega Drive. I think I was like 12 years old, which... some 12-year-olds would probably be in the right place to play that, but really, I was probably just like a couple of years too early to really appreciate it. I remember going back to it after, I had a Dreamcast already at that point and be like, oh, this game is actually excellent.
Yeah, and this one's shaping up to be an absolute banger. Really is. So, yeah, keep an eye on that, folks.
Sega's back, baby.
It actually really does kind of feel that way a little bit.
Yeah, they're picking up some good stuff.
Saying, like the Switch launched with a new Sonic game, didn't launch with a Mario game. Although, incidentally, no mainline Sega console ever launched with the Sonic game either, so that's kind of like a weird feather in the hat.
Well, I think I got one more.
Go for it.
The Legend of Heroes game, I would have said, just got bumped till early next year, so it's been ineligible for this.
Disqualified,
DQ'd. Yeah. But what hasn't been DQ'd is Trails in the Sky First Chapter, which is a full 3D remake of the first Trails in the Sky game, which is a very, very strong duology / trilogy, depending on how many of them you can bother playing.
There's a lot of them.
There is a lot of them, but they are some of the best JRPGs going at the moment, and the world building is off the charts, and I think getting these games into 3D in the new engine is going to really open them up to people who would have struggled with the isometric view, even though the sprite art and everything else was charming and wonderful. Having it available in this format, I think, is something I'm really excited to play on my Switch 2. And I think if you like JRPGs that have some excellent world building and give you a few tools to get out of slogging through 80 hours of something and being able to compress it, then yeah, I'm really keen to revisit Trails in the Sky.
Awesome. That's an incredible you are a trail answer. Sicko, aren't you?
I am. Yeah. I have a problem. And it's the need for more trails.
It's the need for more trails.
It's such a very specific niche as well. Like, this game just has its audience and they are single-handedly just like keeping those things coming out.
It's a bit of a yuck as a situation for Falcom, really, that it feels like we went for so long not getting any of them, and now it's just been an embarrassment of riches for the Trails series.
Yeah.
You fans found yourselves. Yeah, I also have one more as well, and it's I think it, at least at present, as far as I can tell, is still like just a tentatively 2025, which at this point of the year has you feeling a little bit nervous. But Mixtape.
Yeah, yes, yes. That's the follow-up to
Artful Escape, or yeah, at least Artful Escape, a new game by Beethoven and Dinosaur, which I'm still not entirely sure what that game is. I even read a couple of previews off the back of Key 3, and they even at the end of the previews, they were still not entirely sure what that game was. But you know what? I really, 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 really liked the Artful Escape.
Yeah, I didn't get around to it. Unfortunately.
And so based on vibes alone, I will be excited on Mixtape until I am told definitively otherwise I shouldn't be.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It looks cool. I dig the aesthetic of it all. Feels like, I don't know, that Goonies sort of era.
It was definitely the kind of stuff in the 90s kind of a...
Yeah, we kind of grew up with and yeah.
But like just very kind of like high imagination in the head, psychedelic almost. Thank you. So do you have one last one, or are you just going to sit there typing at me?
Sorry, I just, you know, got to do the posting thing for Stephen for his review.
We are working the website from multiple
angles. We are. I want to talk about Keeper because that comes out this year. So that might have stolen a bit of Tim's thunder. But it's Double Fine. That's all I need to know. You're a walking lighthouse. Yeah. It's going to be odd as shit, and I reckon it's going to be a whole bunch of fun. Yeah, so the style of it looks amazing. I love to see Tim Schafer and co.
What's amazing is like Double Fine has a house style at this point, and that house style is awesome. Like, you look at Keeper and you would guess that that was a Double Fine game.
Yeah, exactly.
And I am 100% okay with it.
Yeah. So I'm super excited about that. It's Double Fine. Let them cook.
Indeed, let them cook. My God, mm-hmm. I really hope it's a smaller game. What I really hope is going to. I said this an episode or two ago that we start to see just a bunch of like 4 or 5 hour
Double Fine
experimental
games
from them. Again, they don't need to make anything like big and epic now, and it may even be beneficial for the Game Pass model for them to do it that way as well.
Yep.
Yeah, just let Tim Schafer do some weird stuff that LucasArts wouldn't let him do back in the day, and I'll be happy.
Well, definitely can't see them approving a walking lighthouse game.
No.
So, I think he is. I mean, as much as I'd love us, look, I would not be upset if we got Psychonauts 3 or Brutal Legend 2, but I'm also happy for them to go nuts.
I'd be incredibly happy to get a Brutal Legend 2, but... That really is a my pipe dream.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like really high up in that pile. I think I've mentioned that I wanted it a few times in the past. But yeah, that would be a... The problem is I don't think even with time that game has a big enough cult following that would really be worth even like the hype and excitement and goodwill.
Yeah.
You'd do better with Grim Fandango for that.
Possibly.
Just want to live in Rubikava. Greatest city in a video game ever. Like, fuck me. All right, but yeah, there is actually still a few other things left, but I feel like we've hit enough. We've definitely like run this podcast a bit long. People, you know, you get into your destinations in your car, wherever the fuck you listen to this.
Yep.
I will try to swear less unnecessarily. I should keep that for when I'm very, very angry.
I can't. I just swear.
Yeah. Steve, do you happen to have anything new coming up?
As of 12 minutes ago this recording, my Death Stranding 2 review has gone live. I should also have a Tainted Grail piece going up in the near future. Spoiler alert, I really, really like it, and I'm glad I waited till after it got patched up to give it a review for a smaller team trying to do some cool stuff. And some board game things on the horizon as well, as always.
Yeah, Huso, do you have any of your own projects, or are you too busy like just trying to get everybody else's shit? Like,
oh no, I've got so much to rock.
Oh man,
I've got previews of Sonic Racing and Shinobi coming very soon. I've got an interview with Randy Pitchford coming soon. I have a couple of other things, littler games that I've been kind of playing on the side that I want to review. And I want to mention it. We've been running it for about a bit over a month now. It's called our Indie Watch feature, where once a week we have a spot where the editors all get a turn at picking a couple of indie games that we don't have enough time to review and cover, but we still want to get the word out about them. So that's every Friday. It's Steven's turn this week, so he'll have his up. Yeah.
Have fun there, buddy.
Is Falcom
Yeah.
I'm gonna say yes. Yes they are. There we go.
But yeah.
Yeah. And meanwhile on my end, I'm just gonna be probably recording a shit ton of these in a row so that I can then be absent and still be present.
Create the illusion of your presence.
At the same time.
Yeah.
It reminds me, back university age, I went to a couple of recordings of The Glass House, and then I understood the format a little bit better. Why every other episode seemed more topical than news, because they recorded two back-to-back.
Yep.
And so one was very topical about shit from that week, and the other one was kind of like more vague, interesting.